little man and just draw all of their hearts more and more to you, that they would really trust in you for all of these things. Grateful for who you are and grateful that we can call upon you for such things. And again, for right now, please do speak to us. Guide all of this in Jesus' name. Amen. All right, chapter 14. The book of Deuteronomy starts this way. You are the children of the Lord your God. You shall not cut yourselves nor shave the front of your head for the dead. For the dead. This is an interesting comment that or command that they're given here, of course. And the reason for verse 1 starts with verse 2, for. Or maybe your translation says it differently, because. The reason for this would be simple. For you are a holy people. Holy as in what? Set apart, consecrated, dedicated unto the Lord. A holy people to the Lord your God. And, not just that, but the Lord has chosen you to be a people for Himself, a special treasure above all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. The concept here, and I know we've discussed this in previous chapters and whatnot, in previous books, the main thrust of this, don't copy the pagans in their customs and practices. This is what everybody else does. Well, why can't we do that? Because you are chosen of the Lord. You are His people, a special treasure above all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. So for the children of Israel, there were certain things they were to do and certain things they were to avoid. So actually, this is interesting. These types of things that are mentioned there in verse 1, they're actually referenced in other Old Testament passages. You can dig into this on your own if you'd like. You find this in Isaiah. You find this in Jeremiah. You find this in Ezekiel. You find it in Amos. You find it in Micah. That these are certain things that the pagans would do. You are not to do those things, children of Israel. For us today, as believers, as we seek to find some application for us, it applies to us in the sense that our mourning, yeah, notice the end of verse 1, you're not to do these things for the dead. Our mourning is also linked with hope. Hope for the believer who has passed. 1 Thessalonians chapter 4 reminds us we are not to sorrow for those believers who had died before them or before us, as it says, not to sorrow as others who have no hope. It doesn't say you're not to sorrow, just be tough, get over it. No, we're to weep with those who weep kind of thing. Are we to sorrow? Obviously. But not in the sense, or not like the world around us would mourn, would sorrow. I need to keep going. This is two verses here. But, you know, a true Christian memorial is a wonderful testimony to the lost world around us that we have hope. And I usually, even in a pastoral sense, tend to think of it in that kind of setting. That kind. I use this word. I tend to use the word memorial way more than I will a funeral. It's a memorial. We're celebrating that person's life. We're honoring that person's life. We're reminded of the hope that we have. And I love to say this at memorials for a believer. Man, that person that's gone before us, they are more alive after their physical death than before. Amazing. So it's a testimony. There's a lot more we could say about that. But again, these reminders here and much of this chapter points to what was previously described in the book of Leviticus. Let's keep going. Verse 3, you shall not eat any detestable thing. These are the animals which you may eat: the ox, the sheep, the goat, the deer, the gazelle, the roe deer, the wild goat, the mountain goat, the antelope, and the mountain sheep. Go for it. Verse 6, you may eat every animal with cloven hooves, having the hoof split into two parts, and that chews the cud among the animals. Nevertheless, verse 7, of those that chew the cud or have cloven hooves, you shall not eat, such as these: the camel, the hare, the rock hyrax, for they chew the cud but do not have cloven hooves. They are unclean for you. Also, verse 8, the swine or pigs, pork, unclean for you. I'm glad we live in New Testament times. Pork is unclean for you, Jewish people, because it is cloven hooves, yet does not chew the cud. You shall not eat their flesh or touch their dead carcasses. And of course, we talked about some of this, and again, this is Deuteronomy. It's kind of a refresher of so many of these things. And part of this was not simply to remember that they were people set apart to the Lord, but do you remember some of this conversation? Like, super practically, if you don't cook swine good enough, you're going to get sick. So I'd love for you to avoid getting sick, so just do what I'm asking you to do. And even, you remember this in previous books of the Bible with this kind of discussion, it would have been, none of these diseases that have come upon the other people will come upon you. Like, it's intensely practical. The hand washing, all these things. Everyone all around you get really sick. So if you'll, I love this in the sense of, we don't always understand why the Lord commands us what He commands us. Part of this is simple. We have to trust that what He declares is good for us. Difficult to imagine a life without bacon, but for these people, I'm like, this is good for you. So also the swine, verse 8, and these you may eat of all that are in the waters. Verse 9, you may eat all that have fins and scales. Whatever does not have fins and scales, you shall not eat, is unclean for you. Verse 11, all clean birds you may eat. And you might remember this when we studied this. Oh, where did we study this? Back in Leviticus 11, I think. The word birds in Hebrew is better understood as flying things. Thus, all clean birds you may eat, verse 11, but these, verse 12, you shall not eat. The eagle, the vulture, the buzzard, the red kite, the falcon, and the kite after their kinds, every raven after its kind, the ostrich, the short-eared owl, the seagull, and the hawk after their kinds, the little owl, the screech owl, the white owl, the jackdaw, the carrion vulture, the fisher owl, the stork, the heron after its kind, and the whoopee. That's my fault. I'm so sorry, everybody. I failed you guys so bad. Yeah, thank you, Michaela, for being awesome. Where were we? The whoopee, verse 11, and the bat. And remember this? Like, well, a bat's not a bird, so you can't trust the Bible. No, flying things. That was the reference. What else? Verse 19, also every creeping thing that flies is unclean for you. They shall not be eaten. You may eat all clean birds. You shall not eat anything that dies of itself, i.e., like, or, yeah. I found this dead. Yeah, just leave it. You may give it to the alien who is within your gates, the foreigner, they may eat it, or you may sell it to a foreigner. Why? Well, like, that sounds terrible. No, it's, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. You shall not, and this, I know we've talked about this before too, you shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. Several things, of course, just with this concept here. Well, the foreigner, it's okay for them to get sick? No, he's not allowing that. He's not prescribing that. It's just a reminder then again that you are holy. These things are set apart from you because you are set apart for the Lord. And I always think about verse 21, just in general, beyond simply the hygiene and sanitation things with this, there's always this great respect, reverence, value for life. The Lord values life in all of its forms. And that closing little sentence there of verse 21, you shall not boil a young goat in its mother's milk. This is literally what I have in my notes here. That's just wrong. Like, what's the point of the mother's milk? To nurture, to help this baby, this young little animal to have the nutrients it needs to grow and develop. Like, well, we need something to boil this animal. Like, no, that's terrible. Like, that's just wrong. That's my Bible commentary on that. And then some details about tithing. Verse 22, everyone's favorite subjects, right? By the way, just another comment. Tithing always involves faith. You shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year. We've talked about this. Verse 23, you shall eat before the Lord your God in the places where He chooses to make His name abide, the tithe of your grain, your new wine, and your oil, or the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, so that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. Again, there's purpose behind these things. But if the journey is too long for you to go and sacrifice, dedicate those things in that place, so you're not able to carry the tithe, or if the place where the Lord your God chooses to put His name is too far for you, when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money, take the money in your hand, and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. And verse 26, you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, for whatever your heart desires, and you shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. So this tithe, this 10%, they were to bring this, in other words, if they were to, the last few verses there, if they were to have an animal, I want to dedicate this to the Lord, or I, you know, slaughter this, I want to bring it there, I want to bring this, or the grain, let's say that, the grain to the Lord, it's a long way, is it really going to be in good shape when it arrives? So they could sell it for such and such an amount, then take that amount with them and give it there. And fast forward to the days of Jesus, and what often happened in the temple, hey, I'd like to give this, you can't bring that money here. You need to exchange this, or I bought this other animal, I'd like to sacrifice, you can't buy that, or you, that one's fine for you to purchase for your own, but if you're going to dedicate that to the Lord, of course it needs to be specific with this. And they were just like hiking up the prices, and Jesus' comment about the Lord's, that his Father's house was to be a house of prayer for all the nations, and instead you guys have made it a den of thieves. They were trying to just steal money off of people that were trying to bring this from a ways away. Interesting, and as we keep going with this conversation, in this passage, they were to make sure that the priests had provision so as to serve the people in their priestly capacities. Verse 27, you shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. At the end of every third year, you shall bring out the tithe of your produce of that year and store it up within your gates. And the Levite, verse 29, because he has no portion nor inheritance with you, and the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are within your gates, they come and eat and be satisfied that, or so that, this is the purpose, that the Lord your God may bless you in all the work of your hand which you do. A couple comments just in general about this. In chapter 25, in verse 4, we're going to discover, this is a few weeks from now, we're going to discover a principle which in its original context was primarily intended to take care of animal life. And that principle from Deuteronomy chapter 25 and verse 4 was simple. You shall not muzzle an ox while it treads the grain. Like, man, I need this grain for my family, and I'm using this ox to make sure that it's taking care of the food or bringing in the food, but I'm just going to muzzle it because he can't even have a snack. I need you to work. Like, just let your animal have the grain while it's working so hard. You're probably not going to give it, you know, a 5-minute snack break. You know, so just let it eat along the way. Well, fast forward to the New Testament, and you find Paul quoting this in a couple different places, quoting Deuteronomy 25:4 in a couple places. You find it in 1 Timothy chapter 5, if you're a note taker. 1 Timothy chapter 5, verses 17 and 18. He quotes it in verse 18, but the reference in the context is in 1 Timothy 5, verses 17 and 18. Let the elders who rule well be counted worthy of double honor, especially those who labor in the word and doctrine or teaching. And then, for the scripture says, 1 Timothy 5, 18, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads the grain. And then he also adds this, and the laborer is worthy of his wages, which there in 1 Timothy chapter 5 is Paul actually quoting Jesus Christ in Luke's gospel. That's Luke chapter 10 and verse 7. Paul would also quote this, and I'm mentioning this for a couple reasons here. It all kind of ties together in the context of chapter 14. He also quotes Deuteronomy 25:4, don't muzzle an ox while it treads the grain, over in 1 Corinthians 9 and verse 9. He tells us, for it is written in the law of Moses, you shall not muzzle an ox while it treads out the grain. And then Paul asks this question there in that verse, 1 Corinthians 9:9. At the end of the verse, he says, is it oxen God is concerned about? Like, well, part of the answer is yes. It's obviously rhetorical to some degree. God is concerned about animals. But what else concerns him? The context of 1 Corinthians chapter 9, same thing over in 1 Timothy chapter 4, then the same thing here in Deuteronomy chapter 14 would be provision for, in New Testament context, church leaders, and specifically financial provision for church leaders. So, okay, why am I mentioning this? We'll get to chapter 25 when we get to chapter 25. I'm mentioning it because that really is the emphasis at the end of Deuteronomy chapter 14, that the people of Israel, the children of Israel, notice again verse 27, you shall not forsake the Levite who is within your gates, for he has no part nor inheritance with you. Don't forsake the Levite. And again, he has no portion with this. Take care of your priests is the concept. New Testament, take care of those who spiritually take care of you. It's actually a joy for me to talk about this, and it's worth the mention here. It's worth a couple extra minutes of your time, because as we flip the page really to chapter 15 and just kind of the general concepts and the context over here in chapter 14 as well, it really does give me a chance to say thank you, people of Calvary Chapel in the Ozarks, and thank you, everybody at home. Love you, miss you, right? But thank you for taking care of so many of the material needs of me and my family. Like, it really is a joy that that's not a big weight upon our shoulders. We're doing fine. Our board of directors, I think, has done a wonderful job of ensuring that we can put food on the table, pay our various bills, and even with the current inflated prices, do what everyone else is trying to do, just stink and put gas in your car. So thank you, we're okay. So it's great as I just kind of think about these things, as an Old Testament example, Old Testament teaching with the New Testament principle that's really clearly enumerated, that is quite effectively and efficiently put to work here. So sincerely, thanks so much. You know, that's kind of how it works. That's the way it's supposed to be. Chapter 15 starts with, at the end of every 7 years, you shall grant a release of debts. And we're like, man, that sounds good. I have to keep paying my... Yes, keep paying your bills, whatever, but this is how it worked for them. Sounds great. And this, verse 2, is the form of the release. Every creditor who has lent anything to his neighbor shall release it. He shall not require it of his neighbor or his brother, because it is called the Lord's release. Of a foreigner you may require it, but you shall give up your claim to what is owed by your brother, except when there be no poor among you. Why? For the Lord will greatly bless you in the land which the Lord your God is giving you to possess as an inheritance, only if you carefully obey the voice of the Lord your God to observe with care all these commandments which I command you today. Again, why? Verse 6, for the Lord your God will bless you just as he promised you. Notice the promise to that. We're expected to believe him. You shall not lend, or excuse me, you shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. You shall reign over many nations, but they shall not reign over you. So principles of this were seen all the way back in Exodus chapter 21 concerning servants, Exodus chapter 23 concerning the land, and we think about the land and how they were to have this, and there's some different concepts and conversations that would get us to Jeremiah, and that's the reason they went into captivity in the first place, and the exile, though, by the way, in Babylon, that's where we find Daniel, because they failed to obey these types of things. Another conversation, we've already discussed so many of those things. But then also in Leviticus chapter 25, we find a lot of this conversation, and we studied this back in January of this year. I actually looked it up, like, man, when are we? January. So, actually made a little bit of progress since January. We're moving along here, but God's plan for them was to be generous. And his plan through them, notice verse 6 again, was to be a blessing to many. And we're out of money. We're going to need to borrow from other nations. Not if they, for the people of Israel, not if they were obedient to what the Lord had prescribed for them. Thus, verse 7, if there is among you a poor man of your brethren within any of the gates in your land which the Lord your God is giving you, you shall not harden your heart nor shut your hand from your poor brother, but you shall open your hand wide. Isn't it funny the Lord has to say it that way? Open your hand to him. You're like, my hand's open. Wide to him. Just be generous here. And willingly lend him sufficient for his need, whatever he needs. And obviously, this is all over the New Testament, all over the very law of God itself. I mean, this is Exodus 23 stuff. Again, this is Leviticus 25 stuff, etc. that, hey, let's take care of the poor who are amongst us. Pretty obvious. You know, we got these funny sayings in the English language that many people think are biblical, you know, attribute these to like the Lord. How about this one, this popular saying, God helps those who help themselves. Except it's actually not in the Bible. Like, great saying, but it's just not there. And actually the principle seems to be more accurately stated, probably this way, God helps those who cannot help themselves, and that's part of the conversation here, He most often uses the generosity and the charity of His people to bless, to take care of those who cannot help themselves. So the Lord is reminding them of this, and it's built into the law. So Moses, his instructions here on these matters, they would continue, all these things about the seventh year, about forgiving debt, taking care of the poor, etc. Verse 9, beware lest there be a wicked thought in your heart, saying, the seventh year, the year of release, is at hand, and your eye be evil against your poor brother, and you give him nothing, and he cry out to the Lord against you. We'll see some more conversation connected to this, but if you think about this in your Bible minds and up to this point in the Scriptures, who called out to the Lord? Who cried out to the Lord because of the injustice against them? Often? Or specifically? Was it not the children of Israel themselves? In Egypt? They cried out to the Lord, and the Lord heard their cry, and now this is an Israeli, a Hebrew, a Jewish person, and this person that he's refusing to help is crying to the Lord against fellow Jewish person, and it becomes sin among you. Verse 10, you shall surely give to him, and your heart should not be grieved when you give to him. New Testament principles? This is that it's the kind of hospitality, it could actually be translated this way over either 1st or 2nd Peter, it's grumble-free hospitality. Ever have that where it's not grumble-free hospitality? You're just kind of over at someone's house and kind of getting on towards dinner time and they're like, oh, well, you're still here. We'd love to have you stay. I'm sure we've got enough. I'm sure we can scrounge up something for you to eat. So happy you're here. Like, their tone indicates, like, well, we said we were happy to have you, but grumble-free hospitality. Eesh, don't be that way. Because of all these things, your heart should not be grieved when you give to him. Because for this thing, the Lord your God will bless you in all your works and in all to which you put your hand. Again, why? Verse 11, for the poor will never cease from the land. Therefore, I command you, saying, you shall open your hand wide to your brother, to your poor, and your needy in your land. Don't be bitter about these things. And, oh, by the way, just in context there, repetition tends to reinforce. Let me reinforce that by repeating that. Repetition reinforces. Did you catch the repetition of the use of the word heart in this passage? It's used three times in this passage, verse 7, verse 9, verse 10. Giving to others actually a matter of the heart. And notice there in verse 11 too, the poor will never cease from the land. There's always opportunity. Wouldn't it be great if we eliminated poverty? Yes, it would, but it will actually never happen. How did Jesus say in Matthew chapter 26? Remember the story there in Matthew chapter 26, the woman that broke the alabaster jar that she might generously anoint Jesus. And you remember Jesus is 12, and their response, oh, what a beautiful form of worship. This is such a wonderful... You remember what they said? Man, what is she doing? And you remember their question? Why the waste? And the follow-up question, John tells us it was Judas, but could not we have taken this and sold it and given this to the poor? And Jesus essentially quotes this here when he reminds them, and this is Matthew 26 and verse 11 to his apostles, you will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. There's always opportunity to minister to people everywhere you go, everywhere on the planet. people in need. And we should do so in Jesus' name while not losing sight of Jesus, not losing sight of time with Jesus. The concept of like ridding the world of the poor, or so that there would be no more poor, everyone would have what they need, that there would be no more poverty, you will drive yourself mad trying to do so. It's actually an interesting kind of a side conversation concerning missions. I think a lot of us think, well, we have to go to the place where there's the greatest amount of need. Okay, then we're probably all selling everything that we have, and I would think moving to some of the slums in India or some of the just terrible slums in Africa or South America, because that's where the greatest need, so we should be there. Well, but those things are always going to be there. It's not we turn a blind eye to these things. We help where we can. But your calling, or how the Lord might choose to place you in a certain place, is not always dictated by the need only. There's need everywhere. And I hope that us as the church, as a kingdom of priests, would say, everywhere I go, there's obviously poverty. Everywhere I go, there are people who could use help. And so open wide your hand and your heart to those who need it. Well, he continues there in verse 12. If your brother, a Hebrew man or a Hebrew woman, is sold to you and serves you 6 years, and we talked about this before, how this like kind of service and is a person wanting to get some help, then in the seventh year you shall let him go free from you. When you send him away free from you, you shall not let him go away empty-handed. You shall supply him liberally from your flock, generously, from your threshing floor and from your wine press. From what the Lord has blessed you with, you shall give to him. You shall remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God redeemed you. Therefore, I command you this thing today. And if it happens that he says to you, I will not go away from you, because he loves you and your house, since he prospers with you, then you shall take an awl, a really sharp kind of a craftsman tool, and thrust it through his ear to the door, almost symbolically attaching this person to the house, right? And he shall be your servant forever. Also to your female servant you shall do likewise. It shall not seem hard to you when you send him away free from you, for he has been worth a double hired servant in serving you 6 years. Then the Lord your God will bless you in all that you do. This would take us back to Exodus chapter 21. We talked about this, where specifically the service that this person would willingly surrender to the master. This is bond service, and at the basis of it is love. And the reminder, of course, in this passage there, notice verse 15 again, that the Lord your God redeemed you. The basis for any service is what he has done for me. I remember this so vividly years ago. You ever have those times in life, maybe you're just like real excited about Jesus, and the problem with like getting really excited about Jesus, that's a weird statement, the problem with getting real excited about serving Jesus is that we can become prideful in that, which seems ridiculous. No, I'm just serving the Lord, right? Like even in that we have a tendency to get prideful, but we can get prideful in even looking around us and like, well, how come those people aren't serving the Lord? I'm doing all this for Jesus, but they're not. And I remember just a young believer thinking, God, how come more people aren't getting involved with serving you? This is, you know, one of those handful of times where the Lord really spoke so clearly, not just to my heart, but to my mind. And it was as though he asked me a simple question. Well, Jeremy, why do you want to serve me? Well, Lord, because of your grace. Like, you've been so good to me. You've been so generous to me, even though I don't deserve any of it. And his simple response to me at that point was this: well, then tell people about my grace. Oh, so we can like get mad and guilt people. You should be doing this. Or can I tell you about what Jesus has done for you? And when you realize the redemption that he has, and he pulled us from Egypt, obviously spiritually speaking, all that he's done for us, and the basis of it, his love, why would I not want to then go and serve other people? And that's the emphasis here. Go and do likewise to others. So then we talked about this next section back in Exodus 21 as well, verse 19. All the firstborn males that come from your herd and your flock you shall sanctify or set apart to the Lord your God. You shall do no work with the firstborn of your herd, nor shear the firstborn of your flock. You and your household, verse 20, shall eat it before the Lord your God year by year in the place which the Lord chooses. But if there is a defect in it, if it is lame or blind or has any serious defect, you shall not sacrifice it to the Lord your God. You may eat it within your gates, the unclean and the clean, or the unclean and clean person alike may eat it, as if it were a gazelle or a deer only. You shall not eat its blood, and that's throughout the Old Testament and the New. You shall pour it out on the ground like water. So this is dedication unto the Lord. And again, we've talked about that on plenty of occasions. Chapter 16. You guys hanging? All right. Observe the month of Abib and keep the Passover to the Lord your God. And here in chapter 16, we'll get some reminders about a couple of the feasts. Middle of verse 1, for in the month of Abib, the Lord your God brought you out of the land of Egypt by night. And therefore, because of what he's done, you shall sacrifice the Passover to the Lord your God from the flock and the herd in the place where the Lord chooses. Notice that, please. Where the Lord chooses to put his name. You shall eat no leavened bread with it. 7 days you shall eat unleavened bread with it. That is the bread of affliction, for you came out of the land of Egypt in haste, that you may remember the day in which you came out of the land of Egypt all the days of your life. You'll never forget that. You're not to forget it. There's some built-in practical reminders. And no leaven shall be seen among you in all your territory for 7 days, nor shall any of the meat which you sacrifice the first night at twilight remain overnight until morning. You may not sacrifice the Passover within any of your gates which the Lord your God gives you, but, verse 6, at the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide, there you shall sacrifice the Passover at twilight, at the going down of the sun, at the time you came out of Egypt. And you shall roast and eat it in the place which the Lord your God chooses. Notice the repetition of that. And in the morning you shall turn and go to your tents. 6 days you shall eat unleavened bread. And on the 7th day there shall be a sacred, same word, holy assembly to the Lord your God. You shall do no work on it. So, and we've studied this, at kind of any mention of the Passover and all these reminders, all these details about the Passover. And like, okay, well, why? Why? Why is this not just done, but why is he so specific about this? Where the Lord chooses, don't I have any say in this? Actually, no. Well, if I were doing it, this is how... Well, no, you don't get to say so. Nor do I. Nor did they. And again, why is this so specific? It probably has something to do with 1 Corinthians chapter 5. 1 Corinthians chapter 5 and verse 7, where we read that Christ is our Passover. And Christ, who is our Passover, or that he was crucified for us. And so this was to be maintained specifically as that just incredible picture of who he is and what he's done for us. Him taking our place, just as that little sweet lamb that they had in their homes. They would pick this cute little lamb, it would stay with them like a, you know, a child, this little pet, and then they would kill it and the blood over the doorpost. And that, the blood of that animal was the thing that allowed the angel to pass over that household. Well, it was my goodness. Nope, it was the blood of a lamb that brought deliverance. So they were to keep that sacred. And even if they didn't understand it, and they wouldn't have, they were to keep it sacred. And then Moses again reminds them, and that generation specifically, of a couple other feasts. The first one here in verses 9, 10, 11, and 12, that of weeks or Pentecost. You shall count 7 weeks for yourself. Begin to count the 7 weeks from the time you begin to put the sickle to the grain. Then verse 10, you shall keep the feast of weeks to the Lord your God with the tribute of a freewill offering from your hand, which you shall give as the Lord your God blesses you. And notice the emphasis of that throughout this section as well. You give as the Lord has blessed you. You shall rejoice before the Lord your God. you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, the Levite who is within your gates, the stranger and the fatherless and the widow who are among you, at the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. And you shall remember, again, what? You were a slave in Egypt, and you shall be careful to observe these statutes. So 49 days after Passover, all these wonderful, wonderful celebrations, which revolved around, again, verse 12, the remembrance of what the Lord their God had done for them. I do find it fascinating. I don't know if you do. Verse 11, you shall rejoice before the Lord your God. What a weird commandment. You better start rejoicing. Well, okay, we will. You better do it. And it's fascinating because there's times where, can I say it? Like Sunday mornings even? Yeah, I don't feel like rejoicing. I don't feel like, I don't even feel like singing. I just kind of sit here, you know, nice music, that's great. I don't even feel like being at church, and that's me, right? You know, like, but, you know, I don't feel like these things, but the Lord knows that it's so good for us. And I know we've talked about this before, which is why so often you have this concept, it's a sacrifice of praise. Rejoice! I don't feel like rejoicing. Well, then just try it. This is not a biblical statement. Hopefully it's not unbiblical. Fake it till you make it kind of thing. Like, then just pretend to rejoice. Just sing anyway. Well, my heart's not into it. Well, it's not going to get into it if you don't even try, right? So rejoice. Just sing and watch what happens to you as the sound of your voice is blending with the other voices around you. And there's something about that. And something begins to change as we just even give it a go. Rejoice. I don't feel like it. Well, then don't. It's not like something's going to change. The old adage is really still sound. If nothing changes, nothing changes. I don't feel like it. Then continue to not feel like it. And you reinforcing your opinion that you don't feel like it is going to cause you to further not feel like it, which is going to make you then go from not feeling like it to, I don't want to do it. I feel like not doing it. I would rather not. Just rejoice. I'm just fascinated by these kinds of things that he commands them. Please rejoice. And again, the blessing that it is to them as they were to do these things. So the other feast mentioned here in this chapter, here in Deuteronomy chapter 16, the second one beyond the Passover would be the Feast of Tabernacles, verses 13 to 17. You shall observe the Feast of Tabernacles for a week, when you have gathered from your threshing floor and from your winepress, and you shall rejoice in your feast, you and your son and your daughter, your male servant and your female servant, and the Levite, the stranger and the fatherless, and the widow who are within your gates, everybody around you. 7 days you shall keep a sacred feast to the Lord your God in the place where the Lord chooses, because the Lord your God will bless you and all your produce and all the work of your hands, so that you surely rejoice. 3 times a year all your males shall appear before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses, at the Feast of Unleavened Bread, Feast of Weeks, Feast of Tabernacles, and they shall not appear before the Lord empty-handed. Bring something. Every man shall give as he is able, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. And again, verse 17 really helps to reinforce and provide the blueprint and outline for our giving. And not just financial giving, though that was the context here for the people of Israel, but any kind of giving of our praise, giving of our time, giving of our energy to the Lord, any of our giving, it's response. He has given, and he will give, and since he has, and since he will, and since he's promised to take care of us, the appropriate response would be to reciprocate. It's kind of, since he's initiated the giving, for God so loved the world that he gave. Well, then we acknowledge that, and in turn, we give as we are able. Moving on here to close out the chapter. I'm looking at the clock. Yeah, maybe we can keep going. On Sunday, I talked a little bit about righteousness and justice. You know, the world demands that, but doesn't really want it. how that's the very heart of God. The throne of God is established, righteousness and justice. God's serious about justice, and even the next few verses, it's pretty clear. I'm kind of pausing here before we even read it, because the way justice works, there's no allowance in God's economy, in His character, to sweep sin under the proverbial rug. Even in the Old Testament, sin wasn't swept under the rug. Remember the word for it? Kofar, to cover. New Testament, behold the Lamb of God who takes away the sin of the world. Old Testament, kofar, to cover. But what was the requirement? What was the thing used to cover it? Same as Passover. Blood. The blood of an innocent animal needed, provided, given, poured out in full measure to cover that thing. It's not just, we say this, right? Let's just sweep it under the rug. And what do we mean by that in the English language? Let's just pretend that that didn't, the Lord doesn't pretend that that didn't happen. So there's no allowance in God's economy to sweep sin under the rug. There's always a cost. I mean, even, you know, obviously the New Testament. Peter talks about this. We're redeemed not by tradition, not by silver and gold, etc., etc., but by the precious blood of the Lamb. All that to say, God's justice is important to Him. And let me say it more strongly, in a stronger kind of a sense, He is just. So look at these next three verses and just kind of pay attention to the wording used, and even just based on everything I just said. You shall appoint judges and officers in all your gates, which the Lord your God gives you. He gives you all these gates. Appoint these officers, these judges there, according to your tribes, and they shall judge the people with just judgment. You shall not pervert justice. You shall not show partiality, nor take a bribe, for a bribe does what? It blinds the eyes of the wise and twists the words of the righteous. You shall follow what is altogether just, that or so that you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you. Did you catch the use of those words? Judges who will judge, the need for not just judgment, but just judgment. The wording here about justice, follow what is just. A.W. Tozer, in his classic work, The Knowledge of the Holy, and I don't do a whole lot of book recommending from the pulpit, I would highly recommend A.W. Tozer's book, The Knowledge of the Holy. Kind of, if you've never read it, shame on you. No, I'm just kidding. You're like, I've never heard of it. Then you've now heard of it. I highly recommend you get it. I highly recommend you read it. Just a great man of God, a great communicator of the things of God, and someone who topically, my goodness, was just outstanding at communicating, especially in this particular book, The Knowledge of the Holy, communicating the character of God. We'll finish up with this chapter. But I want to read a couple excerpts rather than just me talk about it. I just want to read a few things. So just, if you would entertain me here and humor me, let me read this to you. The Old Testament, this is again A.W. Tozer, The Knowledge of the Holy, the chapter is The Justice of God. The Old Testament asserts God's justice in language clear and full and as beautiful as may be found anywhere in the literature of mankind. When the destruction of Sodom was announced, Abraham interceded for the righteous within the city, reminding God that he knew he would act like himself in the human emergency. That be far from thee to do after this manner, to slay the righteous and the wicked, or with the wicked, and that the righteous should be as the wicked, that be far from thee. And then, of course, and Tozer is quoting this, Abraham speaking to the Lord, as he asked the Lord, shall not the judge of all the earth do right? He goes on to say this, justice embodies the idea of moral equity. That's a helpful little kind of disclaimer, especially in the context of the end of chapter 16. What are we talking about with this? Justice embodies the idea of moral equity, and iniquity is the exact opposite. It is inequity, the absence of equality from human thoughts and acts. Judgment is the application of equity to moral situations and may be favorable or unfavorable according to whether the one under examination has been equitable or inequitable in heart and conduct. It is sometimes said, justice requires God to do this, referring to some act we know He will perform. This is important what he says here. It's sometimes said this, justice requires God to do such and such a thing. Well, he goes on to say this. This is an error of thinking. Wait, what? Listen to what he says. This is an error of thinking as well as of speaking, for it postulates a principle of justice outside of God which compels him to act in a certain way. Of course, there is no such principle. If there were, it would be superior to God, for only a superior power can compel obedience. The truth is that there is not and can never be anything outside of the nature of God which can move him in the least degree. All God's reasons come from within his uncreated being. Nothing has entered the being of God from eternity. Nothing has been removed and nothing has been changed. A couple more thoughts from Tozer on this. Justice, when used of God, is a name we give to the way God is, nothing more. And when God acts justly, he is not doing so to conform to an independent criterion, but simply acting like himself in a given situation. As gold is an element in itself and can never change nor compromise, but as gold wherever it is found, so God is God, always, only, fully God, and can never be other than he is. God's compassion flows out of his goodness, and goodness without justice is not goodness. God spares us because he is good, but he could not be good if he were not just. And then this, but God's justice stands forever against the sinner in utter severity. The vague and tenuous hope that God is too kind to punish the ungodly has become a deadly opiate for the consciences of millions. It hushes their fears and allows them to practice all pleasant forms of iniquity, while death draws every day nearer and the command to repent goes unregarded. As responsible moral beings, we dare not so trifle with our eternal future. God is just. God is just. And what he gives them, he expects them, let's just say it. Thus all the wording with judges judging rightly and judging with just judgment, he expects us to take it seriously. And again, not if, but since he is just, he would expect us, his people, to act with such justice. And then let's actually close out the chapter. Verse 20. You shall follow what is altogether just. I already read this. That you may live and inherit the land which the Lord your God is giving you. And then verse 21, he kind of shifts gears. You shall not plant for yourself any tree as a wooden image near the altar which you build for yourself to the Lord your God. You shall not set up a sacred pillar which the Lord your God hates. So again, as we've seen all throughout the Old Testament up to this point, what is he saying? Get rid of your idols. No place for those, especially not near the things of God. We'll pick it up next week, chapter 17. Read ahead. Thanks for being here. Be just. Be generous. Have a great night. See you later.